It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. Broadcasting on 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station. Currently overcast and 39 degrees out at the airport. Calm winds, 76% humidity. They're still calling for scattered snow showers, mainly after 1. Partly sunny skies today with a high near 40, west winds to 5. Scattered snow showers tonight too, mainly before 7. Partly cloudy skies overnight with a low of 21, northwest winds to 15. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak residents experienced a short-term power outage yesterday. Refugees from the war in Ukraine will begin arriving in Alaska over the next year or two. And KUAC's Lori Neufeld visits with the winners of the Alaska Statewide Poetry Contest. Those stories plus the Nanana Ice Classic after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson is the next Associate Justice of the United States Supreme Court. NPR's Barbara Sprunt reports Jackson's confirmation fulfills President Biden's campaign pledge to nominate the first black woman to the nation's highest court.
On this vote, the yeas are 53, the nays are 47, and this nomination is confirmed.
With that announcement from Vice President Kamala Harris, who presided over the vote, Ketanji Brown Jackson made history. Three Republican senators joined all 50 members of the Democratic caucus in voting yay, Mitt Romney, Lisa Murkowski, and Susan Collins. Ahead of the vote, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer spoke of the significance of Jackson's confirmation.
We are taking a giant, bold, and important step on the well-trodden path to fulfilling our country's founding promise.
Jackson will be sworn in this summer. Barbara Sprunt, NPR News, Washington.
Bipartisanship was in full display in the U.S. Senate earlier today when lawmakers voted unanimously to strip Russia of most favored trade status and ban Russian oil imports. President Biden is expected to sign the bills into law, the U.S.'s latest attempt to economically squeeze the Russian government, which is already facing sweeping sanctions from the West over its invasion of Ukraine. In Brussels today, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the U.S. had pledged yet more military help to Ukraine, $100 million worth of Javelin anti-tank weapons.
Together, we're sustaining and building on pressure on the Kremlin and its enablers, including with unprecedented sanctions.
Ukrainian leaders, meanwhile, are telling residents in the eastern part of the country to save themselves and evacuate. NPR's Nathan Rott reports the deputy prime minister warns Russian troops are gathering near Ukraine's eastern border and may be preparing for a new attack.
There's been heavy fighting in eastern Ukraine since Russia invaded, but Ukrainian officials say they now believe Russian troops are gearing up for a larger offensive in the region. Their attack in the northern part of the country and near the capital, Kyiv, stalled and troops have since withdrawn. Social media videos showed jammed train stations in eastern Ukraine towns like Kramatorsk as people who have stayed in the region for the first 6 weeks of war are now deciding to flee. An estimated 10 million Ukrainians have been displaced by Russia's invasion. Nathan Rott, NPR News, Kyiv.
Downtown Tel Aviv is the site of a mass shooting. Israeli police say at least two people were killed, several others wounded, when someone opened fire in a bar and restaurant district where crowds of people were dining out tonight. Authorities are advising people to avoid the area while they search for the shooter. It's not immediately clear what sparked the attack, but it follows a series of deadly attacks over the past month. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Some residents in Kodiak city limits experienced a short-term power outage midday yesterday. According to the Kodiak Electric Association, communications and HR specialist Nancy Sweeney, a branch fell on a power line near Voronoff Street, taking power offline for nearly 500 customers in the area. The outage lasted for about an hour, according to Sweeney.
The crew obtained the necessary equipment, closed the minor fault, removed the branch, and then fully re-energized the line at 12:25 p.m.
Sweeney said the outage may well have been caused by yesterday's weather, which was a mix of intense snow in the morning and sunny conditions in the afternoon and evening. KEA has nearly 4,000 customers in the city of Kodiak. It provides service throughout the Kodiak Road system and to Port Lyons. Refugees fleeing the war in Ukraine will begin arriving in Alaska over the next year or two. And the state's refugee coordinator has begun notifying local government officials that some of them will be placed in communities where they already have family ties. Meanwhile, members of the Slavic community in Delta Junction say a few have already arrived. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Today, I'm announcing
President Biden declared 2 weeks ago that the United States and its European allies will soon begin helping Ukrainian refugees find a home away from home.
Many Ukrainian refugees will wish to stay in Europe, closer to their homes. But we've also will welcome 100,000 Ukrainians to the United States with a focus on reuniting families.
Last week, State Refugee Coordinator Issa Spatrazano began informing local officials that much of Alaska's share of those refugees will be placed in communities where they have relatives. And Delta Junction was among the first places she contacted.
We're aware that in our state, there are a number of Ukrainians that live in the Delta area, and they may have family members that will come join them.
Refugees and immigrants from Ukraine and other Slavic-speaking nations in the former Soviet Union began to settle in the Delta area in the mid-1990s after the USSR collapsed. They now comprise an estimated 15% of the area's population, and some of those residents are already preparing to help their Ukrainian family members get settled in.
If we do get refugees and we find accommodations for them, like housing and everything, I'm sure we'll be able to help them with jobs. I mean, the construction season is just picking up.
Igor Zaremba is a member of the Word of Life Church in Delta. He sat in on Tuesday's Delta City Council meeting, and after they'd reviewed the letter from Spatrazano, he told them about his church's refugee assistance plans and asked if the city can help out too.
To cover the bills, to cover food expenses and all that stuff until these refugees get on their feet and get a little more self-reliant.
Mayor J.W. Musgrove said the city can't offer any direct assistance, but can help refer them to agencies that do. Spatrazano says she'll also inform officials in the Mat-Su and Anchorage about the refugees. Both municipalities also have sizable Ukrainian populations.
If we're aware of something that's going to affect your local community through the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program, our goal is never to surprise people.
Spatrazano works for Catholic Social Services, which oversees the U.S. State Department's Refugee Resettlement Program in Alaska. She says the agency hasn't yet advised her office on how many Ukrainian refugees Alaska is likely to get through the program, nor when they'll begin arriving. But she says it'll likely take a while.
This is not going to happen overnight. The screening processes that are required for refugees take 18 to 24 months.
Spatrazano says her program only handles Ukrainians that'll be brought here through the Refugee Resettlement Program. But she says others who aren't with that program may also come to Alaska. And Delta resident Vicky Shostopolov says some are already here.
We actually have a refugee family right now who is visiting us.
Shostopolov says they're only temporarily staying with her parents, who are expecting another refugee family in the next couple of weeks. She says local Ukrainian Americans are organizing their own refugee assistance efforts because they're increasingly alarmed at what they're hearing from family and friends who are still in the war zone.
When you talk to your friend firsthand, it's shocking, it's devastating, you know, and it's just scary what's happening there right now.
Shostopolov says she's glad the federal government is offering refugee status to Ukrainians, but she and other members of the local Slavic community also hope the feds will help other victims, including Russians, many of whom she says oppose the war. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
April is National Poetry Month. To celebrate, KUAC's Lori Neufeld caught up with the first place winners in the Alaska Statewide Poetry Contest.
Middle School Division winner Clover Van Ormer from Juneau found inspiration in a classroom assignment.
It was just a 10-minute quick write, And I had no idea what to write about, and I was just kind of looking around the classroom, and I was like, why don't I just write about this? Yeah, my name is Clover Van Ormer, and the poem that won the competition is called Oldest Friend. Anxiety grabs at children like a shadow trailing behind a runner, like exhaust clinging to the back of a car, like clouds stuck to the breeze. It shows itself in small ways, bouncing legs, wringing hands, small laughs. Only us children can notice when one is feeling uncomfortable to a point of breaking, and even so, no one does anything. Though each and every one of us can see, we continue to focus on clothes, on phones, on social media, on anything but the issue at hand. For confronting it makes it a bigger issue, and making it a bigger issue makes it worse. So we will continue to avoid eye contact, to only break when no one sees, to pinch ourselves under layers of clothing. Anxiety clings to children like ivy up the side of a building, but the saddest thing about it is that each and every one of us relies on it like an old friend, because having something familiar is better than having nothing at all.
And high school division winner William Bradshaw from Homer heard inspiring advice in a show he was watching.
One of the characters in it was writing a poem, and she was struggling, and her friend told her, write a poem about what you know. My poem is about ADHD. I was diagnosed in sixth grade, so it's something I could definitely say I know about. So my name is William Bradshaw. I wrote the poem Focus on the Sonnet. Ambiguous external stirring interferes with thought, drizzled its softened worries that formed vicious salvos. Hours designed torturous distractions only solved by dragging a pill down the throat of the burdened. Assured genetics who crave motivational equilibrium. Do not allow comforting diffusions present excuses which hums tunes of battlegrounds brimmed with their own selves, digging graves for those who travel in tar in order to focus. Attention sleeps peacefully in blood-curdling stress, deficit spending on the fake gold while imperfect silver is hyperactive in its defect's ability to achieve augmentation. Disorder is inevitable. A pill sources false equilibrium. Considering unprepossessing qualities, silver is dignitary. Unauthenticated gold is a distracting inequality.
Adult category winner Wendy Erd from Homer emphasizes paying attention to the world around us.
In this particular poem, I gathered different moments that came in like a resonance for me. My name is Wendy Erd, and the title is Whereabouts. Starts with an epigraph. We're on the line 157, 337, running on line north and south. Amelia Earhart's last radio transmission, July 2, 1937. Green troughs become dark froth rolled under. Bearings dissolve in every direction, ocean. On land, we orient on waves of lilac and wind. Grass seeded along the roadway grew overnight. This morning, small blades ripple. What can we chart? Pollen dusts our thresholds gold, makes ordinary doorways sacred. An unfathomable radiance moves through us. We are more of this world than we know, and less. Body of light seeping across time. Broadcast these whereabouts. Send this news.
You can hear all the winning poems, including second through honorable mention poems, and find out about Fairbanks Art Association's annual statewide poetry contest at fairbanksarts.org. Happy National Poetry Month. For KUAC in Fairbanks, I'm Lori Neufeld.
All bets are in for the Alaska's favorite contest, and that means staff with the Nanana Ice Classic are getting ready to work processing and entering thousands of predictions for when the ice on the Tanana River will break up. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has the story.
A grocery list is a very individual thing. No two shoppers fill their carts exactly the same way. But between February 1st and April 5th each year, there's one item thousands of Alaskans all buy. tickets for the annual Nanana Ice Classic.
You've got those that buy it every year. We've had a few people that are new to the state, so they're like, oh, what is this? And they're really drawn to that big red tin, you know, and the tripod there. So we get to explain what's going on. It's really fun.
Nicole Biddick works at the customer service desk at the Three Bears store in Kenai. The store is one of the local vendors for Ice Classic tickets. Each ticket is one guess for when the ice on the Tanana River in interior Alaska will break, moving the tripod that's planted inside the ice and stopping the clock inside. Guessers had until Tuesday to guess exactly which date and minute they think the clock will stop. And Biddick says some shoppers have taken their guessing really seriously.
364 tickets. So that is a lot. That's our biggest one sale that I've seen.
When was that?
That was just a couple of days ago.
That's over $900 in tickets. Each ticket costs $2.50, and the total sum gets divided between a jackpot for the winners and several charities. At the Kenai store, there's an eye-catching red can near the front where people can drop off their guesses. It's one of more than 200 cans scattered around the state. But the Alaska tradition hasn't always been so big or far-reaching. Ice Classic manager Sherry Fornes says the betting started over a century ago while workers were laying train tracks on the frozen Tanana River.
Back in the early 1900s, the state was planning on building a railroad bridge across the Tanana River. So some engineers that were down surveying for that railroad bridge decided to make bets on when they thought the Tanana River would break up.
The first official year, the Classic sold 800 tickets for a dollar apiece. Today, the Nanana Ice Classic is a nonprofit with dozens of seasonal staff. Those staff follow the tickets from stores like Three Bears to Nanana, where they're counted and sorted. First, Fornes says the 200-plus cans are weighed to gauge about how many tickets each contains.
And then from there, it goes to the sorters, and we hire, I don't know how many people we've hired this year. It's probably close to 70 just for sorting.
From there, tickets go to employees Fornes calls cubbyists, who arrange the tickets. And then the data entry folks, who put all the guesses together in a digital database. They'll print that list and check it once, twice, and sometimes even a third time to make sure there are no errors before putting tickets on shelves that correspond with their cans. Once the ice breaks, staff go to the database and find the cans with the correct times before pulling and checking the paper tickets themselves. Then they declare winners. It's all a big undertaking. Fernes works in the Classic between November and June every year. She's been doing it for 26 years, but this season will be her last.
I love my job. I really don't want to retire, but it's time.
She loves waiting for the ice to go out every year and watching what happens to the tripod when it eventually gives.
Sometimes it tips over. Sometimes it floats in towards the bank. Sometimes it just floats out a little ways, you know, downriver a little ways. It gets stuck in an ice jam. I mean, it's always different.
Fernes doesn't know yet how many tickets they've sold this year. She gets a clue when she hears from ticket agents that they need more. She says that's already happened this year.
So that's a good sign. Ticket sales are going, you know, fairly well.
Once the organizations know how many tickets they've sold, they pay their expenses and determine the jackpot. The jackpot in 2021 was $233,591. Whatever's left over, they send to charities and scholarships in Nanana and around the state. Fornes says the money goes to basketball camp scholarships, food banks, and public radio. On Tuesday, Biddick was taking stock of how many tickets she had already sold at Three Bears.
I have sold so far, our store has sold just over 1,040 tickets this year.
As for when the winners are announced, well, if we knew that, there wouldn't be much of a competition at all. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Since it hired its new finance director last fall, the city and borough of Wrangell has been investing its funds in higher interest accounts and considering new investments altogether. Key to that new financial strategy have been tweaks to local regulations from the borough assembly that it hopes will ultimately bring in more savings for the borough. Borough Finance Director Mason Villarma says Wrangell's savings haven't been strategically invested in the past. When he came on the job last September, he found tens of millions of dollars of public funds sitting in low-interest accounts.
well over half of the borough's cash and investments the last 5 years were earning a checking, you know, interest rate, and that's not acceptable. And so we want to get the most return we can responsibly as a borough, and just have the foresight to use those interest income for meaningful projects coming down the road.
To pay for its infrastructure needs and save for a rainy day, Wrangell's Borough Assembly has approved new investment policies that could help it put more money into the community's savings. Valarma says the goal is to get the most out of the borough's assets, whether that's savings, its self-contained funds, or the permanent fund.
At the end of the day, these are public funds we're dealing with, so we want to be prudent in how we invest those.
But Valarma says they still should be making money, not just sitting around. Since the beginning of the year, the borough has invested $10 million of its savings in the Alaska Municipal League's investment pool. That's a low-risk investment pool for Alaska governments. Those funds were previously sitting in a checking account and accruing minimal interest. The Borough Assembly also updated Wrangell's investment policies earlier this year to allow for up to 10% of its reserves from its enterprise funds, including water, sanitation, and electrical funds, to be invested in low-risk stocks or mutual funds.
Which gives us a little bit broader spectrum of assets to invest in, but still conservatively because it's only 10% of fund balance.
The finance department has also been meeting with Alaska Permanent Capital Management, which manages the borough's permanent fund. Valarma says the fund is doing well. It's grown over 20% in the last 2 years to about $11 million.
Marginally worse the last month or so with the geopolitical situation in Russia and Ukraine, but permanent fund's been doing great.
Valarma says he's reached out to other finance directors in neighboring southeast communities like Petersburg to share ideas and compare Wrangell's investment strategies.
I feel like we're doing, you know, everything our neighbors kind of are, and maybe even a little bit more just in restructuring our investment code. Right on par there, maybe even leading the charge a bit in that respect.
Valarma also says the borough will consider looking into new kinds of investments, like the possible purchase of Wrangell's old mill property, and will consider collaborating with other regional organizations on investment projects.
Read Diverse, Read Indie on Insight Daily Radio. Conversations with today's most influential authors from the world of independent publishing. Denise Lajmadeer is a Native American author, and her latest book is entitled His Feathers Were Chains, an award-winning poetry collection addressing trauma, love, grief, and enduring hope. While the premise of the collection is overt criticism of settler society, the poetry within is subtle, approachable, and grounded in Ojibwe knowledge and customs. We spoke with her about this most interesting book.
My father was also a poet. He wrote poems when he was in World War II. So he encouraged my writing. He found my journal once, and he looked at me and he said, "Keep writing, baby. Keep writing." So he was encouraging. It was hard for me to say I'm a poet for a long, long time. In fact, I bought a bracelet that was made out of typewriter keys, and it said poet on it. And I thought, I can't wear that. You know, this is after my first book was published, and I'd had other poems published in some journals and so on. I said, I can't write that. I'm not really a poet. So I can't say when exactly it was. I think maybe it was Hyde or my writing, but they gave me heck and said, "You are a poet, and you can say that." So now I'm very comfortable with, after 4 poetry books and working on my next collection of poems, that I'm very comfortable with saying I'm a poet and a Native poet and a Native female poet.
That's author Denise Lajmadeer on her latest collection of poetry, His Feathers Were Chains, published by North Dakota State University Press. Read Diverse, Read Indie is presented by the Independent Book Publishers Association.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Today is Thursday. It's the 7th day of April, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 7:20. It will set again at 9:04. That will give us 13 hours and 44 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 58 seconds compared to yesterday. Looking at our local tides, we have a Low tide coming up at 12:49, just a few minutes here on the east side. That will be a 1 foot tide, followed by a high tide at 7:23 p.m. of 5.3 feet. Our next low tide will be after midnight, 12:14 a.m. and 3.7 feet. And our early morning high tide for the east side will happen at 6:35 tomorrow morning and be 7.4 feet. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 1:07 this afternoon. That will be a 1.6 foot tide, followed by a high tide at 7:33 p.m. of 9.3 feet. Your next low tide will be at 12:41 a.m. and be 5.6 feet. And your early morning low tide will be at exactly 7 a.m. and be 11.3 feet in Larsen Bay. Mariners, we do have some weather coming up tomorrow. From Marmot Island to Sitkanak, we have a gale warning for Friday. For today, west winds to 15 knots and seas to 8 feet. For tonight, west 30, seas to 10 feet with freezing spray. And for tomorrow, west 35, seas to 10 feet with freezing spray. Over on our west side in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning for tomorrow and a heavy freezing spray warning tonight. For today, variable 10 becoming west 25 this afternoon, seas to 3 feet, will build to 5 feet this afternoon. For tonight, northwest 30, seas to 8 feet with heavy freezing spray in the Shelikof tonight. And for tomorrow, northwest 40, seas to 9 feet with freezing spray. Yikes. A Samsung phone with a red case was lost either on Near Island or near the middle school. If you find this Samsung phone with a red case, please call this number, 907-486-7784. The Assembly is having their regular meeting tonight. That will happen at 6:30 p.m. You can listen right here on KMXT, or you can see it streamed live from the borough website. On the agenda are contracts for auditing services for the Kodiak Island Borough and the school district, resolutions approving certain unincorporated communities and their respective Native Village Council for participating in the FY 2023 Community Assistance Program, a couple of ordinances, one amending the Kodiak Island Borough's code regarding communication tower approval criteria, another establishing an opioid settlement fund. Other items include confirmation of the mayoral appointment to the Prince William Sound Regional Advisory Council and confirmation of a mayoral appointment to the Parks and Rec Committee of Mr. Benjamin Vincent. Well, it's coming up in just a couple of days. The big St. Herman's Sisterhood Easter Bake Sale is happening at the Orthodox Cathedral at 385 Kashubaroff Circle, Saturday at 11 a.m. And they're asking, please, no early birds. But if you get there on time, you'll see Russian Easter bread, kulik pirog, potato salad, cakes, pies, cookies, and more. Again, that is Saturday, 11 a.m. at the Orthodox Cathedral. No early birds. The week of April 4th through 9th, this week, is National Library Week. Come celebrate all that our public library has to offer. Whether you're in need of a good book, a new movie, or a quiet place to study, the Kodiak Public Library has something for everyone. For instance, Saturday, April 9th, between 11 and 12 p.m., and again between 2 and 3 p.m., Hot Wheels, the wheelchair-bound bunny, will be at the library for a meet and greet. Learn how this bunny has inspired children around Kodiak and beyond. Kids will hear about creative problem-solving, resilience, and compassion. It's for kids 6 years and older and their families. Registration is required as space is limited, so give them a call at 486-8686 to reserve your space. But again, they are going to be 11 to 12 p.m. on Saturday and 2 to 3 p.m. on Saturday opportunities to see Hot Wheels, the wheelchair-bound bunny. Also, don't forget, Thursdays at 11 a.m. is preschool story time for children 3 to 5 and their families. Story time is limited to 10 children. Call the library at 486-86 to reserve your spot at story time. The Friends of Kodiak State Parks is recruiting people to serve on the nonprofit board of directors. They're looking to fill 3 seats for the upcoming annual meeting, which they're working together to promote the KSP system through implementing park improvements, enhancing conservation awareness, and furthering educational opportunities. The annual meeting will be this Saturday from 12 to 12:30 p.m. via Zoom. If you'd like to know more about that, contact Nathan at nathanweber001@gmail.com for the meeting link. That's nathanweber001@gmail.com.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org. Thank you.